Hey, college basketball fans, it's time for the Valley Hoops Insider Radio Show and Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schrader, and I am privileged to write and talk about the Missouri Valley and Ohio Valley basketball conferences. We talk to players, coaches, media members, yep, and the fans about the Valley and the OVC. Stick around. We have a great show for you today. The Valley Hoops Insider Radio Show and Podcast wants you to know about our friend Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet. A great salesman with great products, that's Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet. The One Puede Project is a missions organization helping special needs and terminally ill children in West Africa, and you should join the Upside app. You'll get cash back on gas, groceries, and a whole lot more. Use the invite code HARRY5474. Welcome to the Valley Hoops Insider Podcast, part of the Valley Hoops Insider website. Our guest is the brand new head coach at Drake, Ben McCollum. And Coach, first, we appreciate you taking time with us on the day before your birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. That's pretty good. How did you know that?
I'm supposed to be a journalist. So
there you go. Well, good for you. You got it.
A lot of people said this was kind of your dream job. You're an Iowa guy. Talk about your level of excitement.
Yeah, no, we're really excited. Obviously for the new challenge and to be in Iowa to take on that challenge is really exciting. And they've done a lot over the last few years to build some momentum, to build some success. So then it makes that job even more attractive.
Over 800 winning percentage, 394 wins at Northwest Missouri. True confession, I'm a former Central Missouri Mule, so I'm not really a big fan because of the way you beat my team up. But you guys were wildly successful at Northwest Missouri, four national championships. And yet, people might say, yeah, but he's a Division II guy. Did a guy like Josh Schertz kind of pave the way a little bit for some guys like you?
Oh, I think it definitely helps. I think a lot of times guys that kind of make that leap, either they take jobs that are very difficult to actually win at, and so they don't have as much success. But Josh took a job and obviously did a great job and kind of flipped that program in 3 years and obviously almost won the NIT. So it definitely paves the way. And I think that the differences, between the levels, I don't think coaching's going to be different between any levels necessarily. I think there's just a lot of logistics that go with it that you have to make sure that you have a grip on, whether it's recruiting or now it's NIL and transfer portal stuff, and just making sure that you understand those nuances going into it. But the coaching piece, it shouldn't change.
You've got to find a whole bunch of players. You've got to build a staff. I saw that you signed Bryson Williams. I think that's a great selection. And all, in the midst of all of that, you're moving. You just have, nothing to do right now, right?
Nothing. No, we're just – it's just as calm as can be. Everything is – I can really focus on being present. And no, it's a lot. But sometimes you need to come out of your comfort zone and change a little bit to grow, and it's not comfortable. Obviously that's why you're coming out of your comfort zone, but I think inevitably as time passes and as you fight through it a little bit, I think you can really grow and get better and even improve some things.
I think Marty Martin and Brian Harden are like superstars in this world, where they had to have been big factors in the reason you wanted this job.
You're just great people. Even the first time we interviewed with them, they had a vision. But they not only had a vision, they fought for that vision and they supported that vision and they consistently supported Darren and their coaching staff and made the program better because they're around it. So, when you have the alignment of an athletic director and a president, that makes a big, big, big difference. And we are fortunate to have that here. And obviously with Brian and Marty, they're just fantastic.
At your press conference, and I've seen one or two interviews that you've done, you've talked a lot about, I don't want to make it too dramatic, like a calling that you have, but you talk about coaching being an avenue or a platform for developing, helping, mentoring people. Talk about that and why that is what makes you tick.
Yeah, I went to work for Wells Fargo for 2 months maybe, and I felt like I was pretty good at that job, but I didn't feel like I was making the difference that I wanted to make. And I thought that through coaching and through affecting 18 to 22, 23 year olds' lives that I could impact the greater community and the greater good. And so that's always been the calling. That's always been the number one thing. Obviously there's a competitive component to it where you want to coach against the best, and the higher the level, you know, the better it gets. Right. And so there's that piece as well. But most importantly, we got into college coaching specifically to help people and to serve them and make their lives better.
And then how would you define that? What I mean is, like, as a basketball coach, I can define your success rate by wins and losses. But when you step back and say, I want to help develop and serve people, what does that end up? What are you hoping to produce? What are you hoping to look at, you know, 5-10 years from now?
You know, there's probably not an objective formula to that. It's probably more subjective. Is when you meet somebody that had played in our program, how do they act? Like, what are they doing with their lives? Are they serving others? Are they, you know, great husbands? Are they great fathers? Are they great citizens? And that's so subjective, but you can tell, you know, and I've always felt like you can tell when you meet somebody that played in our program, how they respond to you and how they act is a big deal to us, and how they're able to handle adversity and success throughout their own personal lives. And they have the resources to do that because of playing in our program. So, you know, that's probably the subjective measure to us making sure that they're successful once they leave.
You talk about being able to do that or wanting to do that. Who are the people that have influenced you, or the books you've read, or, you know, what is influencing you to have that kind of approach?
I mean, there's a lot of people. My high school coaches, my grade school coaches, they really helped me understand the impact you could make on somebody's lives. My mom, she's been fantastic. A lot of my former coaches in college, just a lot of people have really guided that. And then just your own passionate pursuit of making people's lives better is just something that I was always attracted to.
When I have been trying to dig around and get to know you a little bit better, I read an article, man, from a couple of years ago, I think, and you talked about in the article, they talked about the Bearcat way and how you have taken some things from the book Art of War, which I know Bobby Knight used to quote as well. Is that one of those kind of guideposts in terms of how you end up coaching, in terms of strategy for winning and losing?
You know, just one little quote out of there is impose your will. And that's always been our mantra and always will be for wherever we go. Just impose your will on everything that you do, whether, you know, just anything and everything in life, making sure that you take all external factors out of the equation. And you make decisions internally for you. The other books would probably be Good to Great is fantastic for that. That's another one that I relied on heavily to kind of guide me. And then Ego is the Enemy is another great one.
Whose Ego is the Enemy? Who is that by?
Ryan Holiday.
Okay. I've read Good to Great. I'm a guy that tries to read a lot of that kind of stuff. Let's talk a little bit of the hoops. I know that you guys have scored a ton. And you've stopped it a ton. What I mean is, you guys play elite defense and elite offense. It's difficult to mix both of them, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we ended up getting really good at offense specifically to protect our defense. So naturally, I probably am defensive minded, but our offense gets all the notoriety just because of our numbers and how they're off the charts. But the point was, the more we score, the more we can set our defense, the more difficult it is for the offense to score on us. And so it's kind of a simple philosophy that both of them add up together. And the more efficient you are on both ends, the more it can kind of create that synergy to where you're just that much better. You know, with your defense, because your offense scores, or your defense, you know, when you get stops, now you can run in transition. When you score more, then obviously you can set your defense, and so it all adds together. But it all came back to, the more we score, the more we can set our defense was always our theory.
And talk about your offensive philosophy. What kind of offense do you play, or is that something that's more dictated by the people on your team?
We're a little more free-flowing, so we allow a lot of freedom, but it's still dictated by our personnel. So whatever strengths each individual have is basically how we're going to play. And, you know, if we have shooting, then we'll shoot a lot of threes. If we have driving, then we'll drive a lot. If we have cutting, then we'll cut a lot. And it's just whatever our personnel dictates is how we're going to play offense.
When you made the decision, they made the decision, you guys made it mutually. You came to Drake, and it's a place with a, man, just a great foundation, great fan base and leadership at the top, as we mentioned. And yet in the transfer portal era, it's also a rebuild because tons of people are moving all the time. So you've got a firm foundation and rebuilding all at the same time. Talk about your approach and how you're going to go about both filling that staff and landing those players.
Yeah, I think from like a just internal perspective, just the job itself has a good foundation, meaning it's got good resources and obviously a great administration, I think, and good fan support. I think from the players and staff, obviously we lost quite a bit. So that will be somewhat of a rebuild. And I don't know, you know, rebuild, I guess, would mean you just got to rebuild it and you've got to get more players and good players. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to take a step back. It just means you have to get more and new players and a new staff. And so we're definitely ready for the challenge and excited for it.
I know we're in the dead period right now, maybe for another day, I think it is, or maybe two, I forget. But have you started to be able to line up the invitations, players coming in, and how is the filling up the coaching staff? How's that going? Like I know I mentioned to you, you signed Bryston Williams, I guess, this week. I saw it posted sometime recently. Talk about the kinds of guys you want to put on your staff and how you're lining up those interviews with players.
Yeah, so, you know, for us, we prefer to hire a staff based on who you want to do life with. And so, obviously, they've got to have a specific skill set. But more importantly, you go through a lot of things as a staff together, you know, good times and bad times. And you want to make sure that it's with people that you enjoy being around because of how much time you spend with each other. So, we're making some moves on some staff, obviously, with Bryston, and then shortly here, hopefully we'll have another one announced here shortly. So we're getting there. We've got to hire one or two more. And then once we get past that, then obviously we're signing up players as well and trying to get them to campus, trying to get visits, trying to, you know, I guess, decipher who's really interested, who just wants to take a visit, and kind of navigating the transfer portal like that.
So what is the bait? I mean, I watched your press conference. You talked about how much you like to fish. So what is the bait for those players that you're trying to bring to Des Moines?
You know, obviously the success that they've had, the support that they have, the city of Des Moines is fantastic. I know kids really enjoy being a part of the community. And then obviously development. You know, I think that we will care for kids and love on kids as much as any staff in the country. And, you know, the more you do that, the more it becomes attractive for kids to be here, even in a transfer portal era. So, you know, we're going to continue that path and make it a great culture, comfortable place to be, and obviously a good place to live in Des Moines.
Two final thoughts. This idea of caring about the players, I think I read somewhere that you see yourself more as a teacher than, maybe not more a teacher than a coach, but you believe in teaching the game and teaching the young men. It really has morphed, hasn't it, for over the years, from the kind of the general of the team as a coach, and rather than a father, an influencer, a mentor.
Yeah, as a coach, you're saying?
Yes, sir.
So I still think I still kind of have a different approach in that I do think relationships still matter. I do think that genuine care for kids matters, and I do think it helps you retain players and obviously attract new ones and establish that culture. So I'm probably still on the other side of that fence, but obviously there's a little bit more transaction that goes on with the transfer portal, and then after that you have to establish quick trust, quick relationships, and be able to guide those young men to be better people.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. I think that's the way the whole profession is moving, and I think it's a healthy one. I'm told that you have a son that's an outstanding player as well, so where you guys end up living will be critical for some local high school. Am I right?
Yeah, I would guess so. I've got two boys that are pretty good. So they love basketball, and they enjoy being coached, and they enjoy winning, and
So yeah, absolutely. Trying to figure that out is important to make sure that the boys are comfortable, and obviously my daughter as well.
From Storm Lake to River of Monks. I had to look that up, what Des Moines meant. The River of Monks and Storm Lake. So it's about water. It's about fishing. It's about growth and life. It's a full, kind of a full circle trip for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's well played. You have done your research. So yeah, I was born in Iowa City as well. So, you know, we've been around. I went to junior college in Mason City, and so I've been around the state of Iowa, and obviously basically Southwest Iowa or Northwest Missouri, where, you know, it's kind of all the same there. So it's been a fun journey, and, you know, we're excited to continue that journey.
Well, we wish you the best. Appreciate your time today. We'll stay in touch. We're big fans of what's going on in Des Moines. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate you having me on.
That's head coach Ben McCollum. He is the new head coach of the Drake Bulldogs, and they're going to put together a roster and be competitive right away.
Are you in the market for a new car? I was, and I ended up at Don Brown Chevrolet here in St. Louis. Don Brown is famous for saying they are on King's Highway at the entrance to the hill, and I went to Don Brown Chevrolet, and salesman Ben Yates answered all my questions. He went the extra mile and helped me understand what the process was like, and then he got me perfectly situated in my brand new Chevrolet Trailblazer. I hate buying cars. I hate all the back and forth. And Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet took all the manipulation out of it, helped me find the car I wanted and really that I needed. If you're looking for a new car, go to Don Brown Chevrolet, but not just to that great dealership. Call 314-474-0270 and ask for my new friend, Ben Yates. There's a picture of Ben and me and my brand new car on our website, valleyhoopsinsider.com. Low pressure, great service, helpful to a fault. Let Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet know you heard about it from me, Harry Schrader, at valleyhoopsinsider.com. The One Puede Project is near and dear to my heart. Parts of West Africa are extremely poor, and birth defects and malnutrition are rampant in those impoverished countries. The When Puede Project is there to help with medical treatment, surgeries, medicines, and therapy. Well, really, whatever those children need. If you'd like to help, head to sheltering-wings.org. You'll see someone with my last name on there, and you can lend a hand to terminally ill children in West Africa. That's sheltering-wings.org. Well, welcome back to the Valley Hoops Insider podcast, part of the Valley Hoops Insider website. Harry Schrader with you again today. And that young man there, everybody's young to me, is Scott Nagy. He's the new head coach at Southern Illinois for the Salukis. So glad to have him with us today. Scott, first of all, congratulations on landing this. I think it's a great job, and I think it's a great fit for you, an Illinois guy. Congratulations.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. The whole young, I used to be the young guy coming into leagues, and you know, I feel like I'm the oldest guy in the league. I don't know, but I've been doing it for quite a while now.
Wright State before this, South Dakota State before that, tremendous winning at both of those places. And I stepped back and watched a little bit, you know, of you know, what you've accomplished, and you have done things in a way that people look at your program and see not just winning, but they see people playing the game the right way and players representing their university in what we might call the right way. That's something you're, I know, building and wanting to build as well.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know how you define that the right way. It's just the way that we want to do it. I, you know, I always tell these young men that we're coaching or recruiting that this whole basketball thing is going to end for them very quickly. And we all know it, but they don't know it. And, you know, our job is to prepare them really for what's coming after that. And, you know, we're trying to win basketball games. We're all locked up into that. Basketball is important. But it's, you know, it's more important to me that they become good husbands and good fathers and leaders in their community. And because this will end, and it will end very quickly. And so, you know, we're pretty simple in terms of how we play and what we do. But just probably like every other coach, we have high expectations.
Why was this a good time for you to make the move to Southern Illinois? I know you're an Illinois person, and you spent a long time at South Dakota State and a long time at Wright State. You're not a guy that's jumping around a lot. Why did this make sense for you right now?
I wasn't looking for a job. Really, both times I've changed jobs, I was not looking for a job. And when I went to Wright State, I didn't know the AD. I didn't know anybody there. And for whatever reason, I was on his radar. I was his top guy, and he pursued me hard and convinced me. And it was a lot the same way, I think, with this one. I wasn't looking for a job. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, I got up on a Tuesday morning, and by Wednesday morning, I was on a plane. And I mean, it happened fast, and my head was spinning. And it was not an easy decision for us, because mostly because of our family. All our children and grandchildren live in the Dayton area. And so a lot of tears. But I think my family knew it was the right move for me. My athletic director there at Wright State retired, and he was a big reason why. That was a really good job for me. And again, I wasn't, it's not like because Bob was leaving, I was looking. I wasn't, but it all happened at the same time. And, you know, I got a longer term deal here, and I, you know, I just come into a place where they're just so excited about basketball.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, I would liken it more to South Dakota State. You know, we were the show in town, and really in the whole state. Going to Wright State, it wasn't the case. Even in our own hometown of Dayton, you know, they had UD, and you know, we still led the league in attendance in the Horizon League, but it, you know, it just had a different feel because we were so near Ohio State and Cincinnati and Xavier and Dayton. And so we, you know, we were a small fish in a big pond, and so get to come back here and be a big fish in a small pond. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, the people in Little Egypt love their basketball. You talked about those early days in Division One basketball with South Dakota State when you guys made the transition, and the difficulty of winning and losing games in those first couple of years. And I loved your story that you shared at the press conference, or maybe it was with Luke Martin, I forget which, but about how you had to kind of reorient some of your priorities.
Yeah, I was, you know, my whole world was built around winning and being identified as a winner. And, you know, in high school we won, in college I won. My first year out, I go to the University of Illinois, we go to the Final Four. I just been around winning my whole life. And I wanted people to identify me, you know, like an Athada Scott Nagy, you know, he just wins. And so we, you know, going through that transition was a very, very difficult period for me. It really made me question, like, do I want to coach? Do I want to, I mean, what am I doing? Because I'm miserable. And, you know, I said that I was just sitting in church one day, and I'm not saying I audibly heard it, but I heard God ask me, do you want to win or do you want to know me? What's more important to you? And it had been more important to me to win above everything else. And not that I still don't battle with it today, because I want to win, but I do think that it helped me. I think that period also helped me learn how to coach, because always before that, you know, we won 80% of our games when we were Division II. We just had better players, and all of a sudden I didn't have better players than the people we were playing. And so I had to learn how to coach better. And so even though it was a very difficult time for me and for our family, as I look back on it, I look at back on it with good memories, because it taught me a lot. It helped me realign what was important to me, and it made me a better coach.
True confession, a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at my local church, and I quoted you. I told them that story that you had shared, and I thought that was just a tremendous story. Your players, your staff, put four guys on the staff, or at least it was announced today. Talk about the putting together of your coaching staff.
Well, it wasn't easy. You know, when I left South Dakota State to go to Wright State, I took three guys with me. And, you know, two of them were full-time assistants. The other was our director of basketball operations. So he knew how I operated. When I left Wright State, my head assistant got the job, and the other two assistants elected to stay, didn't really want to move their families at that point, and I get that. So I was starting from scratch, and that concerned me, you know, because I wanted to have people that had been with me that I knew, that I trusted. And I'm getting ready to put a staff together that I really don't know a whole lot about. And so we worked hard at it. We, you know, I met with Jarence Howard when I got here, And it, you know, it was very clear to me very quickly that he needed to stay. And I've just enjoyed the heck out of him. In the few weeks I've gotten to know him, does such a good job. You know, everybody thinks he's a great recruiter, and he is. He knows everybody, but he does a great job with the players too. They trust him. And so I thought, for continuity's sake, this really works out well for all of us. And then we hired Will Veasley, who, you know, played at Butler, played a national championship game, Illinois State, North Dakota State, UIC as an assistant. Fits my personality really well. I feel like just a confident but humble guy, and so we were thrilled to add him. We still have one other full-time assistant coach to add, and then we kept the director of basketball operations that was here, Justin Ensley. You know, Jaren's told me that he's great coach. He'll be the president of the university someday, and it really. I mean, for a while, it was just me and Jarence, and all the little things. You know, when you become a head coach, you hardly know how to turn a computer on anymore. Everybody does everything for you. And,
sure.
You know, here I was, it was just me and Jarence, and all these things, just little things that I couldn't figure out. It was driving me crazy. So when we got Justin back on board, it really helped me a lot. It's nice to have somebody that knows the whole system already, the school system. So he moves things a lot more quickly for us now. So I appreciate having him. And then we hired Darion Reddick from Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, played at Tennessee State from Belleville. You know, has good contacts there. Was a full time coach there, and he's going to come and be a player development guy for us to start here. But does a great job of that, and just has good contacts, particularly in that St. Louis area, which is an important area for Southern Illinois. And then Tay Gibbs, who was with me at Wright State, is the one guy that came over, and I'm appreciative of that because he has all our stuff on film, our practices, our games, the clips, just all that stuff. And so it's helpful to have somebody that has been with me that can kind of teach our coaches too about what I'm trying to get done.
Darion Reddick, I remember when he played at Tennessee State, his head coach Dana Ford told me one time, I said, "What's he good at?" He said, "Working hard."
Yeah.
He said, "That's his skill. He works hard."
Yeah, and he, you know, very highly recommended, you know, played in the Illinois Jets AAU team in their system. And, you know, so we wanted to interview him just to see what he was like. And he just impressed both Jaren and me. And we said, we got to figure out a way to get this guy on our staff.
It's outstanding. You said in your press conference that your offense is kind of simple, that you're going to run a motion offense versus sets. Talk about the philosophy about why you end up doing it that way.
Well, it's always been my philosophy to recruit good offensive players and then demand that they guard and rebound and do all the tough things. I always say, you know, if you watch young people go in the gym, they don't go in there and do defensive slides and working on blocking out. You know, they're working on their ball handling. They work on their shooting. And you know, there are just some people that have the natural ability to score and to figure it out. And so we like to recruit guys that can handle it and pass it and shoot it, put them at all five positions. You know, people in our offense, we don't really number them because we like our point guards to post and we like our post to shoot it. And so we don't worry too much about that in terms of number. That really, when we number you, it's who can you guard? You know, who can you guard on the other side? And so I always figured if we got good offense players and we never worked on offense at all, they would figure out ways to score. Good offense players know how to put the ball in the basket. And then we're going to, you know, good offense players generally aren't the toughest guys. They're not the meanest guys. And so that's what we got to work on. That's what we have to demand. I think most people would, you know, probably think I'm a more of an offense coach than I am a defensive guy. And it's just the opposite. All I think about is defense and rebounding, but we've always really been good offensively. We've always scored a lot of points and shot a good field goal percentage. Last year at Wright State, we led the nation in field goal percentage. And we were 11th in the country in 3-point field goal percentage. So it was scored 85 points a game, but we were awful defensively. And that was a big frustration for me. Because we really did have a talented team, but we weren't, you know, we just didn't have the toughness and the grit to be great defensively. And so even as good as we were offensively, it cost us a lot of games and, you know, everybody was frustrated with it. So the offense you know, we give them freedom, you know, freedom's earned. It doesn't mean when we give you freedom, you get to take any shot you want and do whatever you want. It doesn't mean we're just going to, you know, run up and down the floor and just chuck it up. I mean, we're going to try to get good shots, but I never want a guy jumping up and shooting it, wondering if Coach Nagy thinks this is a good shot, because you're not making those shots. I want guys to shoot the ball because they want to shoot the ball. And I need guys that'll shoot the ball, and I yell at them that that's not a good shot. And the next time down the floor, they shoot the ball again. Those are the kind of guys I need to coach.
You came to Southern and you talked about the fan base and all that, but Tim Leonard is a guy I think that's going to make just real significant moves at Southern. He's a guy that's been impressing me. Talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, he was a big reason why I came here. He wants to win, and that's what I want. There's always pressure. Like, if people expect you to be good, that's pressure. If people expect you to be bad, that's pressure. So I would rather have the pressure of expecting to be good, expecting to win. I want to be around people that are interested in winning and give our staff what it takes to win. And then, yeah, it's expected of us to get that done. I'm not interested in being average, and I don't want to be around people that are okay with that. And Tim is that way. The chancellor, Chancellor Lane here is that way. So I think it was a good fit for me there. And they really put the pressure on me. We're excited to have me on campus and came after me pretty hard.
Compare and contrast the Horizon League and the Missouri Valley Conference. How do you see them similar? How do you see them differently?
That's a good question. I don't know enough yet about the Missouri Valley. Haven't seen enough of the teams. And it's really, you know, with the whole portal thing now, and you look at how many players are leaving, it's hard to even know. And on top of that, I think there's 5 new coaches in the league, right, too. And so it's really hard to compare any of that. I think, you know, the demographics are different. Most of the schools in the Horizon League were in cities. And, there's just several schools in the Missouri Valley that you wouldn't consider, you know, big cities. And so the demographics would be one thing that's different. Other than that, you know, there's a bit more travel in the Missouri Valley in terms of distance. And then, you know, other than that, the basketball stuff, but I don't know how to compare yet. So I'll just have to wait and see.
Talk about your idea of scheduling. Here you've got to fill up a roster. You've filled up your coaching staff pretty well. You've got to move if you're a family physically, and you've got to create a schedule. How are you going to go about building the schedule? Meaning, how do you try to craft it? Because you've obviously been doing it for years.
Yeah, and it's, I think when you talk coaches, probably for us, the most difficult thing to do. If you've had a good program, right, people don't want to play you, or they always want to start the game. You know, if you do a home and home, can you start here? Even to get a bye game, the high majors, if you're too good, they don't want to play you. If you got a good record against those schools, they don't. And so if you're a good mid-major program, it's the most difficult thing to put together. But I know in the Missouri Valley, and talking to the commissioner, and obviously our desire is to start getting multiple teams back in there. And so you can't just schedule cupcakes. You got to have a decent resume, but it's hard to put together a good resume. You know, they want you to play quad one games and quad two games. Well, the quad one and quad two games are nearly impossible to get at home. You know, those schools can pretty much buy whoever they want. So it's hard. It's hard to get those games. It just is. And it's hard to play a lot of them because they kind of control the strings and you know, who they can play. And so then you end up playing a lot of pretty good mid-major teams. And it's even more difficult now to figure out whether or not that team's going to be any good next year because of all the transferring. I mean, yeah, it's year to year, and everything in 2 years has changed so much. And so it makes scheduling even more difficult. And we have an MTE to get. We probably have 4 other non-conference games to get. So we have some work to do here.
Yeah, I call it the portal pandemic. I mean, it just feels like a disease that has hit college basketball. The multiplication of all of those things, NIL and free agency and the extra COVID year, it has jumbled the things up in a real bizarre way. And it's something you guys have to learn to not just survive, but navigate and embrace.
Yeah, I mean, you can say you don't like it. You can but it's it, this is what it is. And so you better figure out how to deal with it and not complain about it. And so that's what we're working hard to do. I don't, you know, a lot of it I don't like. I don't think it's good for the young men to be bouncing around. I think they're better off to establish roots and have a place when they leave that they can call home. So many of the kids now don't have any of that. And for every player like Marcus Damask, where it works out and looks great, probably 90% of them it doesn't. They may end up with a little more money, but they end up in a way worse basketball situation, and they're frustrated. And so many of them are chasing the immediate money and forget about, you know, if I would stay at the place or go to be in a spot where it's good for me basketball wise above everything else and not the money, it probably gives me a better chance to earn money down the road if I want to play professionally.
Yeah, and 25% of them don't even get a job, get a position that's at the same level. 25% of them are out of basketball or at a lower division or a lower level. Yeah. It just is not working. And I think most of them, tons of them, aren't going to graduate or get degrees because the credits are all messed up. I think it's a recipe that isn't going to end up with a good stew.
Yeah, and I really don't know how much it's going to change because they've opened it up and you know, it's going to be interesting. My son just got into coaching. He's at Cedarville University, Division II school. He's an assistant there. And I just, you know, what's this going to look like when he's my age?
Yeah, no doubt. Before I let you go, you talk a lot about developing the young men and building a winning culture and all that. Who are the people, the books, whatever, that have kind of influenced? I know your father was a coach, but and so maybe it's just him. Or are there other coaches, people, mentors, books that have influenced the way you go about life and coaching?
Well, you know, you mentioned my dad. He was probably the biggest influence for sure. Just in terms of the man he was and not only the man he was, but what he developed into even later in life. You know, I was very proud of my dad. You know, he changed some things about his life that made things better for him and everybody around him. Lou Henson, of course, you know, was a big influence on me and my dad and the other people like Jimmy Collins and Mark Coombs, those people I spent so much time with, and my dad did, they were all big influences on me. And Coach Henson was a big part of all their lives. And so, you know, I'm one of the few guys left on his tree right now. And you know, Mary is still around and I still stay in touch with her. She's doing great. So, you know, I would say those people that I mentioned, I work for Jack Morgenthaler at SIUE. He's, you know, he was from Pinckneyville, went to Houston and coached at Drake and then Western Illinois. And Jack was a big influence on me as well. You know, and then quickly I got into head coaching at 28. So, you know, the people that I mentioned there are probably the most influential people on me.
And speaking of SIUE, will you guys be, do you think that that's a thing that will happen yearly, home and home kinds of things, playing those guys?
I mean, I have no idea. We've not even discussed it to this point. You know, it's one of those things like, you know, Dayton would never play us at Wright State because it's almost like a no-win situation. And, you know, for us in SIUE, it's a no-win. But there's probably some people in you know, the university system that would like to see it. But it's not been discussed with me and we've not had much chance to even talk about scheduling yet, but we have to get on it.
Final question. You mentioned somewhere in one of the things I watched you talking to somebody else, this idea of the regular season championship really being a priority. And I think in today's game where everything is about March Madness, that has lost its luster for some people. But I believe the regular season battle is the thing that is the truest test. Your thoughts?
I mean, it's way more difficult to win the regular season than it is, you know, a tournament at the end of the season. And I understand the importance of the tournament and getting to the NCAA tournament. But I mean, if we're going to coach people, then we're going to try to win the conference tournament. It's not, hey, let's wait around till or the conference season. We're not going to wait around. I mean, and the other thing is, if you do, you put yourself in a better chance to win the tournament anyway. And so, you know, the thought process is whatever we do, we're trying to win it. And so we're putting importance on that. It's much more difficult to do without question. But I understand that all anybody you get to the point where all anybody cares about is how you do in your conference tournament. And, you know, I mean, all you got to do is slip up one time. We did this year, you act like it can wreck the whole season. And I just don't think it should be that way, particularly for the young men.
Appreciate your time today. Wish you all the best. And as you build that roster, we'll be paying attention. And listen, you coach Luke Martin up, all right? Like, really help him get through things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll help Luke.
All right. I appreciate it. That's Scott Nagy. He's the new head coach at Southern Illinois. I'm a big fan of the Upside app. I'm making cash back every time I use the Upside app for gas, groceries, my favorite fast food place, and other restaurants. Go to the Upside app and type in the invite code HARRY5474, and you can make a little extra to help out your bottom line. It's the Upside app with the invite code HARRY5474. Thanks for listening to the Valley Hoops Insider radio show and podcast. Don't forget to visit our friend Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet. He's a great salesman with great products. That's Ben Yates at Don Brown Chevrolet. The 1.8 Project, it's a missions organization. They're helping special needs and terminally ill children in West Africa. And you should join the Upside app I have, and you'll get cash back on gas, groceries, and a whole lot more. Use the invite code HARRY5474. Thanks for listening, and remember, since you've been there, make it a better place. We'll see you again real soon.